Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. I am the show's host, Anna Renault, and you can learn more about me on my website, annarenault.com, and that's www.annarenault.com. And I thank you for listening to Anna's Journey. It has been an interesting trip around the country to get to the Great Lakes Book Bash here in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I am certainly enjoying the train trip, the book event, and meeting some awesome people. I certainly have had some fun staying at some Motel 6 places, some Best Westerns, and certainly this weekend spending some great time here at the Radisson Hotel in downtown Kalamazoo, Michigan. I've always liked that name Kalamazoo. I kind of tease about it a lot, but it certainly has been fun to also be here in Kalamazoo. I am scheduled to have two authors with me this morning, and I'm waiting for them to call in. It should be an interesting event, to say the least, to talk with Elizabeth Mayette and Donald Levin. So, where are my guests this morning? I love doing radio shows, but sometimes doing radio shows live can be a little bit dangerous, especially if the guests oversleep or forget or who knows what all. But I also want to give a big shout out to Jane Rainier, who is a canine wellness specialist. She is our airtime sponsor today, and people can get in touch with Jane on her website, luckydogwellness.com, and that's luckiedogwellness.com, or you can give her a call in Maryland, 410-961-3542. So let's see if we can get this button to work here and activate a microphone. Good morning, Betty. Are you with us?
Good morning, Anna. I wasn't sure if you could see my call coming in.
It took a minute for your phone, for your microphone to pop up on my studio board here. And sometimes technology works really well, and sometimes
yes.
It just drives me crazy.
Absolutely.
So we're here at the Great Lakes Book Bash. I was just talking about downtown Kalamazoo and the great Radisson Hotel that's hosting the event this weekend for all of us authors.
Right.
And it's really great to have an opportunity to talk about Elizabeth Mayette. Am I saying that right, Mayette, or do you pronounce that differently?
Mayette. When I taught school, I used to tell my students, if you're waiting in line and you wonder if it's your turn, you say, is it time for me yet? And then they could remember how to pronounce my name.
I'm having difficulty hearing you, so you may have to speak up a little bit. And I don't know if it's this hotel phone or if it's my computer this morning, but like I said, technology sometimes drives me nuts. So,
tell people
why you started writing. What made you decide that you should write a book?
Well, actually, my first book started with a dare. A friend of mine loved to read romance novels by Kathleen Woodiwiss back in the 70s, and Kathleen Woodiwiss is like the grand dame of romance, and she wanted me to read them, and I kept saying, no, I really don't read that genre. I'm more a mystery reader. And so I finally read a few, and they were wonderful. They were great escape, just lovely stories written well. So I didn't want her to win when I gave the books back. So when I gave them back to her, I said, well, those are good, but I could do that. So she said, well, then do it. And I said, well, then I will. So then I was committed to writing a romance novel. And I was an English teacher for my career in education, and I didn't really have time to polish the book and submit it. So when I retired in 2011, I did polish the book. And Crimson Romance, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, picked it up and published it. And my sequel, So Love's Destiny, was my first book. It's during the American Revolution. The setting is Williamsburg, Virginia, during the American Revolution. And then it was my first book, and so, you know, the ending wasn't as satisfying for readers as it should have been. So I wrote a sequel, and actually the third book in the series will be out in January. And then in between those, I've written two paranormal mysteries.
That is a big switch in genre, to say the least, to go from
romance to mystery. Mystery has always been my favorite genre. I love them. And so I started to write this book, and I'm a pantser, not a plotter, so I just sit down and start writing. And the book took on its own life, as they often do. And so it turned into a paranormal. There's a ghost in both of my mysteries, a different ghost in each one. And Jessie, the protagonist, is a ghost empath. So she can feel the emotions of the ghost, and through that kind of communication, she solves crimes. Or the first one is a cold case, and she solves it.
Very good. Now, you say you wrote the first one on a dare, and then you did the second one as a sequel because you didn't like the ending of the first.
Oh, and I liked it, but there were some... Yeah, there were some loose ends. I liked the ending. I thought it ended in a very satisfying way, but there were a few loose ends as far as the plot went. And so I really loved the sequel. I was absolutely satisfied at the end of the second book. It was just a wonderful feeling to totally wrap that story up. But there were secondary characters in the second book that needed their own story told. So that's my third book.
Well, that's where I was going with my comment when you jumped in there. The first ending, you said some people didn't like, or that there were loose ends. The second book you followed. Quite often, those of us who are writing find that, yes, the books do take on a life of their own. The characters kind of take a life on their own. And then sometimes it's those secondary characters who jump out there, who the readers really like, and they say, well, when are you going to write a better story about this person or that person? And actually, my next guest, Donald Levin, I talked with him yesterday. He has a series of 5 books, and one of his secondary characters may just wind up getting his own series coming up in 2015. So, you know, you've gone from romance to genre, to mystery. Mm-hmm. You've got Civil War. You've got ghosts. And this new book that's coming out, tell us a little bit about that and when to expect it.
Oh, sure. Actually, it's American Revolution and Colonial America, not the Civil War. So the first two books take place
wrong
in
war.
Williamsburg. Yeah, it was a long time ago. But the first two are in Williamsburg, Virginia. And then this third one, as I said, it was secondary characters from Love Spirit. And it starts in Yorktown, just near Williamsburg, and ends up, the story takes place in colonial New York City, colonial Manhattan. And the female protagonist, Jenny, who's introduced in Love Spirit, she falls in love with Andrew, who is the younger brother of the heroine in the first two books. And so they start their own love story. And so she has to leave him and return to New York City because her father is grievously wounded. And she becomes embroiled in the Patriot spy network that was working for George Washington. If you've ever watched the TV show Turn, it's along those lines. Now, I want to explain that I had the idea for this long before Turn was was running on AMC. I knew when I wrote my first book in 2012 that this third book would be coming, that it would be involving the George Washington spy network. And that's just exciting to me because it does bring some mystery and suspense into the book as well.
And since that's your first love is the mystery,
it is.
That is fantastic. I mean, how often does that ever occur?
Right. The title is Love's Courage. So loves destiny, loves spirit, and loves courage. The destiny, the spirit, and the courage are all ships. And so Jonathan Brentwood, who's the hero in the first two books, his ship is the destiny. And that's why the first book is called Love's Destiny. And so each one is called by the name of a ship. And so, yeah, I like the way that kind of thread runs through it.
And
it's available.
Interesting that you were. Go ahead.
It's available now for pre-order on Amazon, and the book Love's Courage will be published January 9th.
It's interesting that you were an English teacher. It sounds more like you should have been a history teacher.
I love history. You know, I was a journalism minor because I was so affected by Watergate and what journalists were able to do to balance out what was going on in the country at that time. And so I became a journalism minor. But in retrospect, I wish I had picked up a history minor. I particularly love the American Revolution.
Well, it certainly established our country. And if people ever really do study history, we have an amazing history. The country is not that old compared to Europe and a lot of other countries, but
so
we
true.
Have certainly done a lot. We really have. I mean, unbelievable. Now, I happen to have worked for the State Department of Education for 32 years, but not in the school side. I was in the Division of Rehabilitation Services, helping people with disabilities. But when I retired, I became a substitute teacher. I actually taught U.S. history for 5 years at an evening day school for kids who got suspended and expelled from day school. And much like you, you took up journalism as a secondary. My secondary was the history. And I love teaching U.S. history. It is amazing what we have in our history. Even now, with everything that's going on with immigration, we have gone through this a number of times in our history, all the way back into the 1800s when people did not want immigrants to come in. And yet we're all immigrants, you know.
Right.
The only people that were here before us were the Indians. And even they
First
immigrated
Nation
from
people.
Other places.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's just amazing if you really look at history and what we've gone through in terms of immigration and how we've developed to get to where we are, including our wars, the Revolution, Civil War. Certainly 9/11, we were attacked here, but the war actually moved to the original attacker, which doesn't normally happen when you have a war of any kind. It usually, you know, whoever gets attacked, that's where the war develops. And somehow America was able to not let that happen. It's just an amazing history. And so now you have three romance novels, and you have two history novels.
Yes.
What's coming up after that?
Well, as you said earlier, readers clamor for more of some of your characters. And in my two mysteries, which are set in 1968, which some young teachers that I taught with thought that was historical, and in a way it is, but I set my books in 1968, so there was no instant access to cell phones and help. You know, they had to figure it out. But they're my protagonist, Angelina, also known as Maggie, her best friend from high school, and there's a cop named Marty, who is Joe's best friend, and there might be a little romance. You know, it's a real puzzlement, like, what's going to happen here? You know, and so my readers are clamoring for the next book in my Kavanaugh House series. The Kavanaugh House is the first one, and this series is set in the Finger Lakes region of upstate New York, which is where I'm originally from. And so it's another story. Jesse is a ghost empath, so there will be another ghost. I already have the premise of the story. But another one that's kind of tapping at my brain is a contemporary romance, and I've not done contemporary before, so that would be kind of a challenge. But I always like to dabble in something different just to stay fresh. So, but I know my readers really want me to write the next mystery. So that probably will take precedence.
Well, we certainly have to respond to our readers, since that
yes.
is where our bread and butter comes from. They certainly
well, and those characters
don't want to be
are still
disappointed.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, those characters are still really active in my mind. Like those stories have not finished being told, and so you know I'm anxious to get back to them.
And some of our characters become very real, very much an active part of our imagination, our ongoing writing.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of slip in here and there. And certainly the themes, as you mentioned, you have your ghosts. What is
right.
your attraction to keeping ghosts in your writing?
Well, I believe in them, number one. I've had personal experiences with people who have passed. And I just, I believe they still can affect us in some way. I had an experience with my mom in which after she passed, she helped me with something. And so I'm pretty intrigued with the concept of people who have passed still existing beside us, kind of vibrating at a different energy, you know. I know it's kind of woo-woo, but I've had enough experience, in, even just in my own family, that I just, you know, to me it's as believable as having another character that's speaking and talking and walking beside my hero. So, yeah, from personal experience, that's just something I believe.
Well, that's fine. There's nothing really woo-woo about that for most people because
mm-hmm.
we don't know everything. You know, we would love to say there's no such thing, but who makes
mm-hmm.
us a, you know,
mm-hmm.
expert in this or an expert in that? And I'm certainly now 67, and I have certainly learned in my 60-some years that I don't know everything.
Right.
You know, people argue with me quite often about believing in God, and, well, what if you die and there is no God? Well, so be it, but I
mm-hmm.
like to believe that there is, and if
mm-hmm.
I live as if there isn't, and I die and find out he is there, it's
right.
too late to change it then, you know.
Right.
So we need to follow our heart. We need to follow
mm-hmm.
what we believe. We certainly need mm-hmm. to follow what we've experienced. And I
right.
think it really adds to our writing. I think it lends
mm-hmm.
some real depth to the writing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
certainly,
absolutely.
Certainly keep your ghosts. You know, that certainly makes sense to me. You know.
Yes. Yeah.
And
well,
now
they
you
certainly
have,
are an integral part to the stories. So,
well, that's interesting to hear too, and certainly for anybody who happens to believe in ghosts, you know, that's certainly something that they might want to pick up your books and check it out for themselves. I know
mm-hmm.
I live Essex, East Baltimore County, Maryland, and
mm-hmm.
we have a new museum. It's actually the original police and fire department from
oh.
Essex from more than 100 and some years ago. And they actually had some Ghostbusters come in because
mm-hmm.
you can sit in the kitchen at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night and you can hear the boots walking upstairs. And
oh, my goodness.
And it's like, is that the fireman? You know, and then you hear something squeals like they're coming down their pole down
oh, the
firehouse.
Pole.
Pole.
Oh my gosh.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, it kinda gives you the willies and people say, oh, you know, it's haunted. Well,
uh-huh.
you know, who's to say it's not? But
right.
if you have sat there and you have experienced the noises and
mm-hmm.
the chills and whatever, you know, there, so far at least, has been no scientific explanation for these noises.
Right.
So,
right.
you know,
yeah.
who's to say?
Who's
but
to
it
say?
Just sounds very interesting that you have had the experience and you've been able to include it into your writing. So, Betty, where are your books available?
My mysteries are available on Amazon, and my romances are available as ebook and print. My mysteries are available as ebook, print, and audiobooks on Amazon. And then my romances are available as ebook and print at all at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes. So you can get those most anywhere.
Okay, and I've been calling you Betty, but on your books, your author name is actually Elizabeth Mayette, Neyette. Thanks a lot for being with us, Betty. I am going to now
introduce
you, Donald. Pardon me?
Okay. I said it was a delight to talk to you, Anna. Take care.
See you downstairs.
Okay.
All right. We've been talking with Betty about her romance novels, her mystery novels, her ghosts that are in her novels. It sounds like a really interesting set of books that especially people who believe in ghosts might want to check out. So we're going to move on in the show. And as I said, today's airtime sponsor is Lucky Dog Wellness. Jane Rainier is a canine wellness specialist, and you can look up her website at luckydogwellness.com. And that's LuckyDogWellness.com, luckydogwellness.com. And Jane's website has several things available right on the homepage, certainly some things about helping your dog when they're aging or if they're having a chronic illness or disease, trouble adjusting to a new home, all kinds of information available right on her website. And she also now has a Fifi Corner for her new book that she has recently released. So, Donald, are you with us this morning?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning, Donald. We are here at the Great Lakes Book Bash in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and it has just been an awesome couple of days. And certainly for me, traveling by train since October 1st to get here, I went the long way around the country. It has been an absolutely unbelievable trip. So, Donald, tell us a little bit about you. Where can people find your books?
People can find my books on Amazon. They can find them on barnesandnoble.com. They can order them through bookstores. They can order them directly from me. My website is donaldlevin.com. And I have both print and ebook versions if people are interested in reading them on ebook, all four books. These are a series of mysteries. I call them the Martin Proust mysteries after the main character, who's a police detective named Martin Proust. They're actually police procedurals. The first three are anyway. And they're set in Ferndale, Michigan, which is one of the northern suburbs of Detroit. If you have heard of the famous 8 Mile Road, which is the northern dividing line between Detroit and its northern suburbs, Ferndale is the first suburb north of 8 Mile. So the books are based in Ferndale, but they range across the entire metropolitan area and into Michigan. They go up to Traverse City. They go west. So they're all over the place.
Well, that certainly changes the scenery in a mystery book and makes people really look a little bit about what is in Michigan and where these actual activities are taking place, since it's a real place that you're mentioning. Now, you mentioned that you have four books and that it's a series, but I know when I talked to you yesterday, you already have book number 5 in the works. When is that coming out?
Well, I'm planning on bringing that out next year. I already have 60,000 words written in the draft, and I'm planning on finishing the draft this coming month in November. And then I'll be starting the rewrites and the edits. So I'm hoping to get this out by the fall of next year.
And that's
It's going to be... I was just going to say it's going to be... the fifth book in the series, as you said. The detective in the fourth book was retired, and he's going to continue as a retired detective, but he's also connected with a private detective who he met in the third book. So it's an 83-year-old private detective who's actually based on a real person. I was in a car accident a few years ago. I was on my bicycle in my neighborhood, and I was hit by a car that ran a stop sign. And I got in touch with an attorney, and the next day, this 83-year-old private detective came out as the investigator of the accident. And I knew immediately that he was going to be a character in one of my books. And as it turns out, he's going to be a character in several of the books.
Very good.
So I'm looking forward to getting the next one out.
As I was just talking with Betty about her books, you know, that personal experience and being able to weave it into our books, I think just adds depth to the story. It really does. And the fact that you're using, you know, real people in real places, I think just adds a little more mystery to the whole book.
Yeah, I agree completely. In fact, the detective, the main detective, Martin Pruse, has a son in my books who is profoundly multiply handicapped. He appears in all of the books, and he really is an important character in the series, and people who read the series always come away thinking that Toby is their favorite character. Toby is the detective's son, and he's based entirely on my grandson, whose name was Jamie. It's a way for me to keep Jamie alive in all of our memories. And it's also, it also, as you said, adds depth to the character of Martin Pruse, because we see this incredibly loving relationship between Martin and Toby. And it adds depth to the character. Toby serves as a kind of grounding element for Martin. Martin sees him in the morning. He lives in a group home, Toby does, because Martin can't take care of him. Martin is a widower. And Toby has extraordinary needs. So he lives in a group home, and Martin sees him in the morning. He sees him at night. He takes him out at social events. They go to the movies together. They go swimming. They go to breakfast every morning. So it's Toby based on an actual character, and he really does add a kind of unusual depth to the series, I think.
Well, and as I mentioned yesterday, several of us authors were talking about some of our secondary characters and how sometimes they wind up being the next series. Some of them are a strong enough character that maybe they either need their own book or their own series. And if some of your readers are coming away saying Toby is this really strong character, maybe that will be your next challenge.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday, and I think it would be an interesting challenge because Toby is nonverbal. He has cerebral palsy. He has cognitive disabilities. He has visual disabilities. He can't take care of his own daily needs, so he has to have constant care. So it would be a challenge to write a story about Toby. Or a novel about Toby, but I had been thinking about using Toby as a kind of central character in at least one piece of writing. And you, when you suggested it to me yesterday, you got me thinking that it might be an interesting thing to continue
well,
to think about.
There's so much technology out there these days. There are these nonverbal folks, and I happen to have worked for the Division of Rehabilitation Services for 32 years, and I have seen some severely disabled people do some amazing things. And certainly with technology and an assistant, it's amazing what these folks can do. And just because he has cerebral palsy, just because he's nonverbal, just because he may not have 20/20 vision, doesn't mean that the brain isn't working. And if he's been able to go out and socialize and been able to go out to the movies, what is in his brain or in his psyche that needs to come out and might be just the key to solving one of your mysteries? It'll be interesting to see if you're able to develop that. And it certainly would be a way to honor your grandson.
Yeah, and in fact, in several of the books, or the second book particularly, Toby does take a kind of role in helping his father understand what's going on. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, we don't really appreciate the kind of interior life that many people have who can't express or articulate their thoughts the way people do as a rule.
You know,
in fact,
exactly 1 year ago, I was sitting in a conference, and our keynote speaker actually was speaking via computer that he had tapped out onto a typewriter, onto a computer, and then the computer read his speech to us. Totally nonverbal person.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
he was awesome, and he certainly gives you a little bit of insight into just what his life had been like, because people see him as totally nothing. He can't do this, he can't walk, he can't talk, he can't... But his brain was still functioning. And I think the speech itself took 20 minutes just to read to us, and he said it took him 4.5 hours to type it out. I mean, we just don't always know. Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. In fact, as you exactly said, we often look at people like Jamie and like Toby in terms of what they can't do. They can't talk.
Okay.
They can't walk. They can't. They can't have jobs. They can't do the kinds of things that we tend to think about as defining us. And one of the things I want to do in my books is show what they can do. Specifically, how much Toby can do and how much Toby enjoys his life. In fact, Jamie, Toby's model, had a computerized communication device called a Dynavox, and people would record sentences and thoughts into it, and then they would play in Jamie's ear, and when the one he wanted to say came around, he would hit a button. With his elbow, because he had most freedom of movement. And one day at his school, he had a school program, and they brought in some dogs to work with the kids, some therapy dogs. And one of the dogs came up to Jamie and started to lick his face. And Jamie hated to have his face touched. He liked kisses, but he didn't like people to touch his face. He certainly didn't like dogs to slobber all over his face. So he was on his Dynavox, and as this dog was on his tray and licking his face quite happily, Jamie hit the button when the phrase came around, "Let someone else have a turn." So that was entirely appropriate.
Right. And that's what I say, you know, his brain was still working, and he was still able to communicate, and with these various computers that now talk, it is amazing what these folks can do and participate in. There certainly was a young man who also had CP who basically was told he would never go to college. He went to Towson University. He graduated. He is a fantastic artist. They put a thing around the top of his head with a stick in it, and he uses that stick to paint. Somebody made a short film of his life, and he won a big award in Hollywood for this video. And it's called King Gimp, G-I-M-P. And he is unbelievably talented art-wise. He sits on the floor and paints these beautiful canvases. He's now had, you know, art shows in museums in New York. And for many years, unfortunately, people assumed that he could do nothing. And it was just fortunate that he got into a group home where the family that was running it said, "We want to do this art therapy. We want to de-stress some of these folks. We want to give them an outlet." And they uncovered the fact that this young man had this talent. So it's awesome that you're going to have that in your book. That is fantastic. And you're saying that your books are on Amazon, they're on Barnes & Noble's, and your next book is coming out in 2018, but there are four books out there now. So tell us again the names of four books.
The first book in the series is called Crimes of Love, and it's about a seven-year-old girl who goes missing off the streets of Ferndale, and Martin Proust, the detective, is called out to look for her to find out what happened to her. The second book is called The Baker's Men, and it's about a shooting that happens after hours in a bakery in Ferndale between Iraqi war vets, and Martin Proust is called out to look for what happened. The third book is called Guilt in Hiding, and it's about a transport van for handicapped adults that goes up in smoke off the streets of Ferndale, along with the driver and one of the passengers. And as you might expect, because we've been talking about Martin Proust's son, Toby, this hits home to Proust particularly hard. So he goes all out to find out what happened to the van. The fourth book, which is just published in April, is called The Forgotten Child. And in that book, Proust is retired as a detective, but someone asks him to look into what happened to a young man who disappeared 40 years ago. So his search takes him back not only into the history of Ferndale, but also into the history of the art scene in the Cass Corridor in Detroit in the 1970s. And Cass Corridor was a sort of countercultural hub at that time. And the next book, I can give a little teaser about the next book. He's got two cases going in the next book. One of them is about an ordinary middle-class kind of guy who is found overdosed in a sleazy hotel. And the man's wife wants Proust to find out what happened to him and what kind of secret life he was living that led him to that. And in the other plot thread, he is approached by the daughter of someone who died in prison a while ago to find out what actually happened with her father. So we've got these two intertwined plot threads in the new book, and that'll be out probably in September next year.
Well, that certainly sounds like a challenge to get the two plots to either run simultaneously, or how many times do they cross paths? And it really, I think, again, as authors, it's amazing what we can do with our writing. Our words are powerful, and they really, I would hope, for most people, make you think. Certainly with the mysteries, trying to figure out the whodunit, but even just the character development. You know, certainly having a character like Toby and raising awareness of, you know, disability issues certainly is something near and dear to my heart, partly because of my 32-year career of working with individuals with disabilities, but also as a writer, really using that tool to raise awareness of issues that really need to be brought forward. We're going to be running out of time here shortly. Donald, tell people again how they can get in touch with you and how they can find your books.
They can get in touch with me through my webpage, which is www.donaldlevin, that's DonaldLevin.com. And you can email me from directly from the website if you'd like an autographed copy of the book. Just drop me an email and we can arrange it. And otherwise, you can buy it through all the books through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can order them through bookstores anywhere, or you can get directly in touch with me.
Very good. Sounds like a great plan. I will see you downstairs at the book signing here in just a little bit. Thank you so much, Anna. You're welcome. Take care.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, we have been talking with Donald Levin about his series of mysteries and the fact that he's got book number 5 coming out next year, and certainly been a really interesting show to hear about even Betty going from romance novels to mysteries. It is really, I think, a challenge for those of us who write to really look at the power of our words and what we can do with it, and certainly issues that we can bring forward, and certainly things that we can talk about and do with it. And I would hope that listeners will certainly look up Elizabeth Mayette, M-E-Y-E-T-T-E, and Donald Levin, L-E-V-I-N. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. I will be back on the air next week. I will probably be doing several authors over the next month or so, certainly from the Great Lakes Book Bash, but also from the Great Valley Book Fest that I did in California, and certainly some local authors in Maryland. Books make great gifts for the holidays. Certainly think about either buying the gifts or buying gift certificates so that readers can buy the books that they would like to have. Think about it, the holiday season, shopping. For some people have already started, but certainly November and even early December is a great time. Think about getting the autographed copies from the authors. It's a great way to really surprise and help a reader enjoy. Thanks a lot for listening to Anna's Journey. Thanks a lot to Jane Rainier, a canine wellness specialist, for being my airtime sponsor with Lucky Dog Wellness. And again, thanks for listening to Anna's Journey here on Blog Talk Radio. Certainly feel free to look me up on Amazon. I have about 18 books over there. Some of them are about cancer. Some of them are for children. Some of them are just fun books to read. Thanks a lot. Take care. Have a great day.